When we first started looking into 1930s radio pedagogy, we assumed we'd mostly find articles about critical radio appreciation.
And we did.
But surprisingly, 13 of the 28 articles we reviewed, or nearly half, actually focused on students writing and performing their own radio scripts. In some cases, teachers such as Doris Nelson and Wanda Orton partnered with local radio stations to literally put students on the airwaves. But even teachers who didn't have that access hacked everyday objects to create mock radio studios in which students could perform their scripts for an audience. For example, in a 1937 article, Mildred Campbell reports,
"Roy McCullough had just made us a microphone and a gong. Perhaps they were not things of beauty, but they were sincere imitations. The base of the microphone was a stout piece of iron taken from some discarded machinery. Anchored in it was a broomstick on the end of which, elaborately and securely fastened with wire, was a mouthpiece fashioned from the wheel of a toy racer and supplemented with wire. Our gong was a sturdy tin top that had doubtless saved many a kettle from boiling over, the knob of which was swathed and draped in a clean white rag that the gongster's hands might be hygienically protected."
Mildred Campbell was clearly the MacGyver of her era.
Yes, she was. Now, I'll never look at a tea kettle the same way again.
Yeah, it's funny, but I actually like Campbell's hacker ethic. She rejected the need for expensive professional equipment and instead rolled her own. We may not use broomstick mics anymore, but we still make up for lack of equipment access by hacking everyday objects.
Yeah, I mean, who needs a fancy pro audio recorder when you can just whip out a cell phone? The point is making media that matters, not teaching professional tech skills.
Exactly. But let's move past the technology they used to really get into what motivated English teachers in the 30s to engage students in radio production. It turns out their arguments for the value of audio composing are quite similar to those we hear today. In a 1939 article, Keith Tyler explains,
"The outcomes of the radio workshop are of two sorts. In the first place, it gives valuable training in the consumption of radio programs. Just as the lad who plays a few tunes on the piano is a more critical appreciator of serious music, so the pupil who tries his hand at script writing and acting is a better judge of radio programs. The second type of outcome relates directly to the field of English. Because of the strong interest in the work, it affords excellent motivation for writing and speech. Students who try to catch an audience through the preparation of effective script learn more about effective writing than they do through set assignments of themes in any ordinary composition class."
Yep, I've definitely made similar claims in my own classes. When students have the experience of editing audio interviews, they gain a more critical literacy about how audio editing is often used for ideological ends. And when students create audio texts for audiences beyond the classroom, they often are more engaged than they are with conventional print writing.
Absolutely. The argument that audio composing increases student engagement turns out to be very old, although teachers of the 1930s talked about students a little differently than we do today. In a 1931 article about working with students to collaboratively produce radio broadcasts, Ruth Batten explains,
"The attitude of the boys was different from that of the ordinary classroom. One little boy, stupid and lazy, who had, as far as we could tell, never written a paper of his own in his life, wrote and rewrote a short speech. We noticed he began walking faster and moving about as if he really contemplated getting something done."
Stupid and lazy. Ouch.
Yeah, that's some ableist bullshit right there. But nevertheless, the trope that students become more engaged when composing new media is still with us. And underneath that trope is the implicit assumption that students are not motivated by other forms of writing. And despite her unfortunate willingness to call students stupid, Batten did usefully position collaborative radio production as a way to democratize classrooms. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we give you Ruth Batten.
"We believe in democracy, but we have little of it in our classrooms. We have the idea that youth is incapable of assuming any responsibility. Too many teachers are afraid that any move to relinquish their hold on the boys and the girls will result in pandemonium and halt learning. On the contrary, it is amazing how stupid and so-called bad boys will evince real interest when placed on their own responsibility.
Really? You could just call students stupid in the pages of an NCTE journal not just once, but multiple times?
Yep. Those were the good old days. I guess. Okay, so offensive characterizations of students aside, Batten's assertion that we have too little democracy in our classroom still rings true. And I totally agree with her claim that collaborative audio production can be a great way to enhance students' agency in learning and enable them to participate actively in civic discourse.